Okay. Can everybody hear me? I think I hear it on the microphone. Fantastic. So I'm going to call our meeting to order, the Ethics Commission in-person meeting. No one is participating remotely. It's 4:37 in the afternoon. Hello, everybody. It's nice to see your faces. Let's start the meeting as we always do with the pledge, if you'll all join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. So first up on the agenda is confirmation of quorum, and I counted, so I know we have quorum, but for the record, let's go ahead and go around the room and say our names. So I'm Ellen Schmidt, the chair of the Ethics Commission, happy to be here this evening. Amani Mugamet. Everybody. I'm not sure the tape picked it up, but I definitely see and heard Amani and JJ and Mary Bland, so just we know you're all here. Kirby's going to share an ethics thought with us today.
So I have a quote from Anne Frank. How lovely to think that no one need wait a moment. We can start now, start slowly changing the world. How lovely that everyone, great and small, can make their contribution towards introducing justice straight away. Anyone can always give something, even if it's only kindness.
Thank you, Kirby. And usually we hear from Carla, but if you're not aware, Carla's excused herself from the meeting today because her husband is quarantining and she's quarantining along with him. So hopefully they'll be out of quarantine at the end of the week and she'll be back in business, but out of respect, she didn't want to come to the meeting in person today. So next up on our agenda is minutes approval. I hope that you all had the opportunity to look at the minutes. The first set of minutes that we're going to look at are the May 10th, 2021 minutes. You might recall that we deferred approving them at a previous meeting because we wanted to include some additional information. Joe Rogan had asked or had shared some input that he thought they could be more robust, and so they were updated and distributed. So if you haven't looked at them, go ahead and take a moment or two to review, and then once you've had a chance to do that, I'll entertain a motion to approve them. We have a motion to approve the minutes from Mary Bland.
I have a question. Is this the James Young that you're referring to in the minutes here? Mr. Young, a previous Ethics Commission chair, stated the deputy director position was created to extend the ethics director position. Is that James Young?
I believe that's his first name. I've never met him before that day, but I think it's James Young, who was the former chair.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure of that.
Does his first name appear anywhere else?
No, that's why I was asking. It doesn't appear anywhere else. Especially since he was a former chair, I just wanted to be sure.
Would you, Mary, perhaps like to amend your motion that you are recommending that the minutes be approved with the addition of James's first name?
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the May 10th, 2021 minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anybody opposed? No. Okay, so those minutes are approved. Thank you, everybody. We have additional sets of minutes to review. The next set is the legislative committee meeting minutes from May 20th. So if you haven't had a chance to review those, go ahead and take a look. I'll give you all a couple of minutes, and then once again, I'll entertain a motion to approve them. Anybody notice anything of concern or any comments they want to make? So does anybody want to make a motion to approve those minutes?
I move to approve the legislative meeting minutes from May.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the legislative committee meeting minutes from May 20th, say aye.
Aye.
Is there anybody opposed? So those pass as well. More minutes to review. Next up are the ad hoc nominating committee meeting minutes from June 1st. And once again, let's take a couple of minutes to review if you haven't had a chance to do so, and then share any feedback, or I'll entertain a motion to approve. Anyone have any feedback? Anybody want to make a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve the ad hoc nominating
committee. Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Anybody opposed? Okay. Thank you. Those minutes pass. Okay. So also on June 1st, we had the full Ethics Commission meeting, and so you have those minutes to review as well. So go ahead and take a moment to do that if you haven't already, and then it will come as no surprise to you that I would be open to entertaining a motion to approve them if someone is so inclined. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Oh, there's multiple seconds. Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Thank you. Those minutes are also approved, and that takes care of the minutes portion of the meeting. Next up are our reports, and so we have a report from the Ethics Office from Kirby.
Thank you, Ellen. So the Ethics Office has been working on a number of matters since the last time the Commission met at the beginning of June. We had our budget presentation to the Mayor's Budget Review Committee in about mid-June. I'm happy to report that the independent authorities have agreed to increase their contributions to the Ethics Office, and Carla is working on finalizing the terms of that with the memorandums of understanding with them that will formalize those agreements, so that would be good news for our budget. We don't know what the specifics of our budget yet are because it hasn't been yet filed by the mayor, but as soon as that gets released, we will let you know. And the Ethics Office has been scheduled for the budget hearing before the City Council Finance Committee meeting on August 13th. So we'll keep you posted about that. Also, we've been very busy with doing tons of training. We had our elected officials training on June 7th, 2021, and we made it fairly interactive using this app called Slido, where they could poll and do things and yes and no, and they seem to enjoy that aspect of it, so that was good. We trained them on conflicts of interest, voting conflicts, gifts, sunshine law, campaign regulations, and public records, and court, and along with the Office of General Counsel. So it was a good training.
Well, if I can throw in my two cents, I went to the meeting and it was very engaging and everybody seemed very interested and the app was a big hit and I was afraid to push the buttons because I didn't want to be wrong. but I did think it was a good meeting and good training and I was glad I was able to go.
Thank you. We also have trained the incoming council president, or actually he is council president now, excuse me, council newbies, the ECA, on handling certain administrative matters, including the processing of gifts. There was a recent change to the gift law by the state ethics commission, so we wanted to make sure that she was apprised on how to process things that come into council in accordance with that new opinion. We've done employee training. We are in the process of developing trainings and presenting them to JAX Board, AHA, boards and commissions, the JHA and JEA. So we have a pretty full slate of trainings coming up. We also work with JEA to do some post-training ethics toolkits for them that talk about or develop in further detail some of the concepts Carla covered in their managerial training last fall. And those have been a big hit with the manager of the JEA. We've been working diligently on financial disclosure compliance with the city. I'm happy to report that the Ethics Commission is 100% compliant, so thank you so very much to all of you for your diligence to that important requirement. And I'm also happy to report that I think we're down to 5 or 6 outstanding filers for the whole city, so that is really good. We try to get those all done before the end of the grace period, so that nobody is fined by the Ethics Commission at the state level. And lastly, I've been working a lot on council conflicts of interest inquiries and voting conflicts and also some of the JEA. And I recently worked with the ODC and some staff and city council to revise the boards and commissions application for council appointees to boards and commissions to screen for conflicts and some of the other issues that have come up with boards and commissions. So we've been happy to do your work. Thank you.
Thank you. Cherry, do you have a report for us from OGC?
So I would say that yesterday our office, we just found out that Mr. Gabriel is going to be leaving effective August 6th. He's going to the private practice, and that he will be the interim general counsel after Gabriel leaves. So, I also saw in the minute that I saw today for the first time that I'm supposed to give you guys a briefing on extraordinary circumstances because that became an issue. And I apologize. I just realized I was supposed to do that, but I haven't done any research on it. So I'd like to postpone that until our next meeting and give a more extended, maybe even a written opinion on it if I need that.
Of course.
Thank you. And that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Complaints Committee. Beautiful Darcy. Do you have anything to share with us?
There is no update. I think I updated the commission last time we reviewed complaints, and I think just missed 8 of them. And that's still going on.
Thank you. And Amani, beautiful Amani, do you have a report for us on the Legislative Committee?
We have no update either since our meeting.
Oh, thank you. Well, those were short and sweet. From old business, I'll take the part regarding the Ethics Director search. When last we met, the outstanding item was for Employee Services to conduct a reference and social media check on Kirby, and that came back. I don't know what the word is, clear, clean, okay, approved, no issues. And so an offer letter was presented to Kirby, and she signed it, accepting the ethics director position effective October 1st of this year. The next step in the process is that the City Council Rules Committee has to consider Kirby's appointment as the next ethics director, and we expect that they'll be doing that at their meeting next Tuesday, July 20th. And assuming that goes well, and I have no reason to think it won't, then the council is scheduled to vote on the appointment at the July 27th meeting. So we'll hear more on that as the process continues to unfold. Any questions? So next up on our agenda is new business, and there's some training. Kirby, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I'm going to take that one. It's been a while since I think pre-COVID, where we've given you all some training. And so this is a summary of some of the material we cover more than commissions training. Dr. Freiberger actually completed that training recently, so some of this might be a little redundant for him. But this is what it's based off of, and it's just a good reminder and a good refresher. So hopefully those that are sitting on the side, it should be on the screen in front of you, and those that are on the other side, it should be on the big screen behind me and Cherry and Mary Lynn. But this is just a reminder that you should have a manual that we pass out to you that the Board of Commissions, and it summarizes all the important areas of law, but it's always a good resource. And if you misplace it or you can't find it or you want a new one, just let us know. We're happy to oblige. So as a historical context, we like to frame the importance of the reason and development of ethics laws in our country. And it actually goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War with Benjamin Franklin. He was the ambassador for the United States to France during the Revolutionary War, and he was charged with developing a close relationship with France in order to obtain France's support in the war through supplies and materials and money and all kinds of things. But he developed a very close relationship with the King of France while he was over there. And so when it came time for Mr. Franklin to return to the United States, the King of France bequeathed them with this diamond-encrusted jewel snuffbox that you see. It's quite beautiful. So Mr. Franklin was very proud and really impressed by his new snuffbox, and so he showed it to the new members of Congress, and they were outraged that he was acquiring so much personal wealth for merely having done his job. And they wanted him to give it back, and he said no, because it would be a slap in the face, a personal affront to the King of France, and it could jeopardize the relationship between the support of France and the United States. It was his position, and Congress said, well, it actually could jeopardize our relationship with the undue influence or quid pro quo, and we don't think it's good that you do that. So they reached a compromise where he could maintain the box in his personal possession so long as none of the diamonds were removed, and that worked really well until his daughter inherited the box, and I don't know if you can see it from the picture, but in the outer ring, there are some diamonds that are missing, and the legend has it that his daughter removed those to finance her personal lifestyle and her trips to Europe. But we love to use this example in training because it perfectly illustrates not only the development and historical nature of the ethics laws and what they're designed to prevent, which is city governmental officials and employees from personally benefiting from their position, but also helps to illustrate the tension between personal ethics, those things that we learned growing up, the golden rule, treat others as you want to be treated, and also government ethics, which is the independence and integrity of the institution itself. So that just helps to set the table. So I'm going to go over just briefly three different topic areas that you may encounter when you're serving on the Ethics Commission in the city, and also some of the ones that we cover in our training for Board of Commissioners. And we make it interactive. We develop scenarios for the training as a point of discussion and to illustrate and help apply the legal rules. And so when we do that, we've developed this ethical decision-making guide to get people thinking about if they have an issue that occurs, what should they be asking themselves? So the first thing is this action legal? Does it violate state law or city ordinance? And then the second one is, even if it's legal, does this create a problem for the city or the citizens that you serve? Even those that might be legal in accordance with policy can have an impact on decreasing public trust. So we just want to make people mindful of that. In this day and age of social media and instantaneous reporting, things can hit the internet pretty quickly. And so just be mindful of the appearance of pressure as well. So the first one, cover area, is sunshine law, because that's the one that you are most likely to encounter. There we go. So the first question we ask is, what's the purpose of sunshine and public records laws? And this comes out of the manual. There's a paragraph in the manual. But essentially, the purpose of that is transparency and to increase public trust in government. And that actually is why ethics laws at the state and local level, such as the sunshine law and the public records law, conflicts of interest, gifts, etc., exist to ensure that transparency and public trust in government. And as a the Sunshine Law, it applies to any communication between two or more board members of the same board on a matter that could possibly come before the board in the future. So in other words, it doesn't have to be on the agenda. And if that happens, that communication has to occur and those be able to be heard by the public. And honestly, my experience and also Carlos, what we found is when there are issues that arise under the Sunshine Law, most often they're very inadvertent. And the reason is because our human nature is not is to engage and to communicate and develop communities and to share information. And so although the Sunshine Law seems relatively easy to comply with and straightforward on paper, in person it's not. It's very different than that. So for instance, we often will get questions about I'm the board chair and I'd like to pull my chair fellow board members on what committees they want to serve on. That's kind of procedural and seems really innocuous. That question alone and the response, like, what committees don't serve? I want to be on complaints. That's procedural. But what often happens as humans is I want to be on complaints because I was really concerned when so-and-so filed this complaint and raised this issue that came before the commission. And the next one says, I agree. So right there, in the course of discussing something procedural, you easily slid into unintentionally something that's substantive that can come before the board. So as a matter of course, we often, as a best practice, say, don't do that. Write everything through your staff and allow them to do that. And there are a couple, allow them to gather the information and share it with the board. And there are a couple of important points that we like to highlight for people because they deal with common misperceptions. So the Sunshine Law applies to any communication. It doesn't require that you're actually in a meeting. So if you're having any discussion, if you're walking into or out of a room, that's really common as humans. Walking into a meeting, what's on your mind is what's going to happen at the meeting or what happened at the last meeting. So you want to start talking about it, but you're not in the noticed meeting. It hasn't opened yet. So that could be a sunshine danger area. Conversely, after the meeting ends, if you're talking with other people about something that happened during the meeting, that could also implicate the Sunshine Law. So it's very counterintuitive to how we are as humans, and those are some of the issues that come up for our office and in training. So we just like to give reminders about that. The next thing that we wanted to highlight for you is that the matter has to be something that could possibly come before your board in the future. In other words, it doesn't have to be on your agenda. You don't have to have ever considered it. It just has to be within the authority of the Ethics Commission to consider. That's really broad. It's a lot broader than what most people think, which it actually has to be a matter on the agenda. And it still applies, the Sunshine Law does, after the vote is over. So just keep in mind during some of those things. So because of all of that, because the Sunshine Law requires your communications with your board members on matters before the commission to be held in those meetings, it does not allow you to discuss with your board members any of your board business by phone, email, text, or other communication outside of the notice meeting. And this is a hot topic, not necessarily for you all, but in the area of Sunshine Law in the state and here locally in terms of social media. Social media is a really popular way for boards and commissions to get their messages out to the community and to have them engaged in the work of the board and commission and provide feedback. But because so many people are on social media, it's very easy for somebody to respond. And this actually was the subject of a Miami Herald article in 2019, where there were two Miami Beach commissioners that were discussing on Facebook a vote that had previously happened. It was over a sign regulation ordinance that didn't pass. So Commissioner A went on to Facebook and expressed her displeasure about the fact that the restriction ordinance and the signs didn't pass and how ugly she thought it was going to look like the strip. And Commissioner B responded and said, the reason it didn't pass is because you didn't agree to my compromise proposal. So right there, they're having a communication outside of the notice meeting about something that could come before their board. And so complaints were filed in regards to that. And the Commissioner B that responded said, listen, I didn't violate the Sunshine Law. Number one, the vote was over. And number two, I only repeated what I said in the public meeting. But the issue is that particular communication they're having at the time on Facebook is outside of the notice meeting. So as you can see, it's very easy, I think, as humans, to kind of slip into this danger area. And that is a really hot topic right now with the social media and the implication of Sunshine. Also, you can't go on tours together, which the fuel don't want to do another law. And then we also caution against trying to use your staff as a liaison to share violating the sunshine law. There's a clue. If you walk into a meeting and you absolutely have no idea what's going to happen and how it's going to turn out, you're clueless, it's very uncomfortable, you're probably good. Mm-hmm. If you walk into a meeting and you know what's going to happen and how the vote's going to turn out, ask yourself, how do you know that? How did that turn out? So I remember one time there was a rather contentious city council election for their new officers, and there had been reporting on how the votes might come out, and there was speculation as to who went. It was going to be very close, like 10 to 9 or 11 to 8 or something, and they announced the office, and the council president's face literally dropped, like his chin, and I was like, if I had a snapshot for that, I could use it in training. He clearly wasn't worth the sunshine level. He was expecting something completely different based upon the reporting, so that's just good to know. And we also tell boards that if you have a matter of great public interest and there's no discussion about that interest, the board comes in, they do a motion. We should do this. I second it. And all of a sudden it passes and there's no discussion. That's going to cause sunshine issues. We've seen that in a number of boards in the city where people will complain to us or they will get attorney because there's no discussion. So we follow up with this scenario. You're on Facebook and see that a fellow board member has posted a great idea for a project your board can work on. You really like the idea. Can you comment on it? Can you give a thumbs up? What do you think? No. And that's one of the things, is a thumb up, an emoticon, an emoji, whatever you want to call it, that's a form of communication. Most people may not necessarily think of it that way because there aren't letters associated with that. You're not typing it out. But that is a form of communication, so yeah, you definitely can't do that. So we just instruct boards and commission members, if they see something like that, to give it to their staff and liaison. Let them know that that's something they're interested in and ask the chair to place it on the agenda. And the Sunshine Law is rather broad, so it does apply to all your meetings, both committees and subcommittees, any informal workshops you might have to discuss something, even if you're not taking a vote. And two or more members and a planning commission. So the Sunshine Law requires, that your meetings are open and accessible to the public. So if you have someone that has a person with disabilities and they're wanting to attend, you have to provide them an accommodation. You can't have your meetings, which you never do, in a place that has unreasonable access for the public. They have burdensome security procedures or discriminating against a certain segment of the population. And also, the forum must be physically present in person, which I know you are incredibly familiar with, and that's been something that we've lived through recently with the COVID, but that is a reoccurring issue. You must notify the public in advance of your meetings. We recommend setting the best practice and take written minutes of all of your meetings, and also always allow an opportunity for public comment. And to Cherry's point about extraordinary circumstances, I included this in here because of COVID, this has been a recurring issue for the commission, and it also has been a recurring issue with other boards and commissions in the city. So I just thought a little bit of education on this would be good. So what the Sunshine Law says is that a board member is permitted to attend a meeting by phone or electronic media and to vote if the quorum of the board is physically present in the meeting location, and the member appearing electronically or by phone has extraordinary circumstances determined by the board, and the bylaws or rules of the board don't prohibit them attending or voting by phone. So those are the three requirements. And if those three requirements are met, really the critical piece of that is extraordinary circumstances. What does that mean? What is required for it? For the Attorney General opinions, it's left at the discretion of each board, but the Attorney General has opined in a number of opinions that a physical infirmity or illness is an extraordinary circumstance. And they have also opined on the other side to give guidance that a mere inconvenience or occasional inconvenience of attending meetings in person may not be extraordinary circumstances. So you sort of have the two ends of the spectrum, and it's left for the board to determine kind of in the middle what those look like. And it should not be used routinely to permit members to regularly attend meetings by phone or electronic media. And that, of course, has not been an issue for this commission, but that has come up in the city in the past. So based on the fact that we're still in COVID and we see some of the cases rising, and changing here in Duval County, and some of the other actions by boards and commissions in the city, like the DIA and the waterways, they have adopted an internal rule defining what extraordinary circumstances are. That's the recommendation of the office, is that perhaps the Internal Operating Procedures Committee could take a look at this, have a more detailed report from Terry on it, and consider developing a rule so that way it's consistently applied, particularly in the circumstances that we find ourselves today, and you can have it ready and not have to do it on an ad hoc basis. So Terry asked if we had the rules from DIA and waterways. I can get them. I don't have them here today. I didn't want to get into that much detail, but yes, we'd certainly present those to the committee if they decide to undertake that.
And that way you're not reinventing the wheel, and then all of the boards can be consistent, because I'm sure their rules are the same. It's the same attorney for both commission, waterways, and DIA. So the rule is the same for both, right?
It's not the same.
Oh, it's not. No. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, so that, yeah, even more of a reason to take a look.
You're welcome.
I keep all my notes in this hot mess of a binder, and leave it here with her so I don't take it home. And if I, by chance, take notes outside of here, I bring them in and stick them in this binder.
Great. That's a great practice. And we do try to share that practice with other boards and commission members and their staff just to make it easier on them. Because you don't want something to happen, like them have a flood or a fire or something, you know, a tree falls on their garage in a bad storm and they lost their records. So, all right, so public records are any document that's connected to your public business. The public does have a right to inspect those upon request, but they have to be preserved, which is why we just covered all that. And just as a reminder, I know that you all know this, but it's the content of the document that determines whether it's a public record rather than the location of it. And this happens actually kind of more frequently than you might expect. So if something's on your personal laptop, an email, text message, social media, it could be a public record if it relates to your city business, and that's a common misperception sometimes. Yes?
Question about that. So I follow the same things that are terrible. I don't keep anything except in my building. So that means if I get an email to schedule a meeting, I don't keep that. Because I figure we already have a simple repository for communications back and forth and something like that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. So if you're getting general information, like you got an email today from Sandy with the minutes and the agenda, or back and forth communication with one of us about scheduling the meeting, you don't need to keep that because we have it and it's back up on the city server. What you all need to be concerned about is if you were ever to get an email from or communication from somebody or documents from somebody outside of the staff that we wouldn't necessarily have, or if you created something. If you were chairing a commission or you are a committee and you undertook an initiative to work on something, those kind of things, something that you either created on your own that you didn't share with staff, or maybe you brought a copy but didn't get a digital copy for us to put the server or something like that. So it would be a limited amount of things that we wouldn't be generating that you should retain on your own. Thank you for the question. It's a great question. So a couple of scenarios that we cover in our training, just to drive this point home. If you get an email from a citizen, which I'm sure you don't know, but on your personal email about your board business, is that a public record? And of course, the answer is yes, because it involves your city business. And so you want to make sure you forward that to your city staff. And I'm sure you're not inundated with emails from citizens about your board business, but some other boards in the city are. And then the last one is about handwritten notes during board meetings, and whether or not those are public records and should be saved. And the general answer is the best practice is yes. This is actually kind of a gray area. If it's only your grocery list and something that you're writing just to yourself, and it's not designed to formalize your knowledge or to save it or to be shared with others, then it might not be. But it is a gray area. And so just as a matter of warning and best practice, we do tell everyone generally, assume that notes that you're making during your board member meetings are probably public records. All right, we have one other quick topic for you, and that is gifts. I know that you all probably do not get a lot of gifts and a connection to your ethics commission service, but gifts is actually broadly defined under the ethics laws, and that's a misperception that it has to be given to you as a result of your service on the commission, or a result of your government position. That's not what a gift is, actually broader than that. It's anything that's given to you, or done for you, or given to somebody else to be given to you. So you all file the gift disclosures with the state, and you're supposed to be disclosing any gifts you receive over $100 during each quarter. And that would include, like, if you got married, any wedding gifts that were over $100. Any birthday gifts, you get over $100. Any holiday gifts, you get over $100. So that is a kind of common misperception that it has to be given because you serve on, in the government. Ellen, you have a question?
Yes. I'm thinking about the questions I should be asking. Maybe one of them is who bought the gift and gave it to me? Because aren't you excluded from reporting gifts from family, or is that wrong?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Because that is about to give back my watch.
Yes, that's an important exclusion. So gifts do not include those things that are given to you by relatives. or things that you are given in the course of your employment. So if you have a client that always gives you a holiday gift and it's because of your private outside employment, that's not going to be a gift. Your compensation from your private job is not going to be a gift. That's okay. True. And those are important distinctions. But if you have, you know, a lifelong friend and they let you stay at their beach condo for 2 weeks, that might be a gift in excess of $200, or in excess of $100, which is the limitation. And so to illustrate this, and this comes up sometimes where here locally, people are offered events to tickets. So if you have tickets to the Jacks game, including access to a private suite, what are three questions you should be asking yourself before you accept them? And it's, what is the value of that gift? Because the limitation and the restrictions kick in only if the gift is over $100. Then the second one is somebody expecting something from me? Does that get implicate another portion of the ethics laws? And lastly, is the giver a lobbyist or a vendor? So if you're getting Jack's tickets in the past or a private suite and it's not coming from a lobbyist or a vendor, the value is likely to be over $100. You can accept that, you just have to disclose it. You know, if your best friend buys you tickets to the playoffs with a private suite because they love you so much, you just have to disclose that on your gift disclosure. So the gift law, just to reiterate, says that you can't accept gifts from anyone doing business or lobbying the Ethics Commission with a one-time gift that's over $100 in value or more, or a series of gifts that are $250 or more. And the gift is valued based on the actual cost to the donor, unless some special rules apply, such as travel. We have that circumstance, as you know, happen in some of the cases where the Ethics Commission has actually set forth specific rules at the state level on how to value travel and air and airfare and those kind of things. And so as a wrap up, we test the knowledge check and say you've received a gift of 4 concert tickets valued at $75 each. Who are all the categories you can accept the gift from? Could you take it from your staff to the city board? What do you think? If Sandy's generous enough to give you 4 tickets valued at $75 each, can you take them from Sandy? Yep, that's right. Yes, you could, but you have to disclose, right? Because the 4 times 75 is $300, so it's over your $100 limit, but Sandy's not a lobbyist or a member of the Ethics Commission, so you could. You might, as a personal practice, not want to, not feel comfortable, but you definitely legally could accept them. Could you deal with a paid lobbyist before the Ethics Commission? No, right? Is that values and that? But everybody gets that question right in training. It's the other three that they sometimes struggle with. What about your neighbor that's not your lobbyist or a vendor? Yep, okay, good, yes. Or your adult child who's a paid lobbyist. This is true. So she says you would accept them to be safe or not? Okay, so she would accept it, but just declare it just to be safe. And since this is your relative, even if they're a lobbyist, it's okay. You can accept it and not declare, but there's no harm, as you know, declaring something. So that is it. So that's just a brief overview of some of the topics that boards and commissions routinely encounter. If you have any questions, please let us know.
Thank you. Thank you. Next up on our list of new business is the reappointment of LaTanya Lipscomb-Smith. LaTanya's term on the Ethics Commission is scheduled to end in December of 2021, but she is eligible and interested in being reappointed to a second term. And so we have to think about our next step. There's, as I understand it, 2 options for us. One option is if we want to appoint a nominating committee, which is the process that's outlined in the internal operating procedure rules, Rule 7. In Rule 7, it says we would appoint a nominating committee, and then the nominating committee would discuss and make a recommendation and come back to the full commission. Another option is to waive that rule and handle it at the Ethics Commission level, which is the practice that we've used several times in the last couple of years. We did it for Ioana, who was the chair when I joined. We did it for me when I was up for reappointment, and I think we also did that for Imani when it was her turn to be reappointed. But if we opt to do that and handle it at the commission level, we would want to make that determination and then publicly notice it so that when we discuss it at the next meeting, the public knows. So Imani is proposing that we handle it at the Ethics Commission level and waive the rule. Second, and I see Mary Bland with her hand up.
So I just have a
question. Okay.
Would you like to do it again this time?
Okay, excellent. You're wanted. I hope that feels good. So just making sure my own brain, I understand. Well, we have to vote. So we have a motion and a second to handle it at the Ethics Commission level and waive the rule. Any more discussion about that now that we've made sure LaTanya is 100% interested? And then just so I understand what's going to happen, if we vote that that's what we want to do, then we're going to notice it. Tell me, Kirby, exactly what's going to happen, because I want to make sure that I'm not fuzzy.
Thank you for asking me to clarify this. So I put this on the agenda just to not necessarily get, you can vote today if you'd like, but more to get a general consensus of what the feel of the commission might be. Typically, if we're going to waive the internal operating procedure, we like to provide notice to the public and the meeting notice to let them know in advance. So when it came time for the consideration of her reappointment and the next meeting or two, which will come kind of quickly, you could waive it then by a formal vote after we give notice to the public. I was just trying to get a sense of where the commission was landing. So if we were going to have to appoint a nominating committee, that we could get that process started.
Okay, so that's helpful. So we took the pulse of the group, and I saw multiple nodding that we're in favor of handling it at the Ethics Commission. So what will happen is we're not going to vote on that today. We kind of discussed it. Excuse me. I'm half Italian, and I just spent a week with my mother, and now I talk with my hands, so I apologize. So we'll discuss it at the next. We're going to notice it and then discuss it and formally vote on it at the next meeting, and then at that meeting we can have the discussion and reappoint or not reappoint LaTanya as the group decides?
Yeah, so you have a motion on the floor, which you could vote on, but the public has no knowledge of that being a potential waiver of the internal operating procedure. So what we have done in the past, to be transparent and to ensure the public has knowledge of it, typically what we've done is just get a sense for what the commission is doing, and then we would send out, when we send out the notice of the meeting where that's going to be considered, where the reappointment of her is officially going to be considered and voted upon, we would put in the notice that the commission will also consider waiving this particular internal operating procedure. So that is the first vote at the reappointment, and if that gets paid, then there's a subsequent vote on whether to actually reappoint.
Got it. Yes, I do. So is our option either to withdraw the motion, I'm looking at Cherry because sometimes she helps me with Robert's Rules of Order, or to defer it to the next meeting? What do you suggest?
Yeah, I would go ahead and recommend, Imani, if you want to withdraw your motion so that way the public is on notice of the reappointment by the commission at another public
Thank you. I'm sorry the way I explained it led you to make the motion in the first place. I'm going to own that one for the team. That's on me. Any other questions about the process? And when we get up to that point, we'll have some more information about LaTanya, what committee she served on, and all of that. That's part of the process as well?
Yes, it is. So the Ethics Commission Internal Operating Procedure under Rule 7, the last paragraph says that in the case of reappointment, commission members must demonstrate a positive history of performance with the commission and a commitment to the commission, including but not limited to their attendance at commission and committee meetings and their contributions to the commission. So yeah, that's all part of the information that we provided when we consider whether to reappoint.
Okay. It's not on the agenda, but I think it's worth noting that our friend Joe isn't here, Joe Rogan, because he resigned because he took some fabulous new job. And he was appointed to the Ethics Commission by the Chief Judge, and so I just wanted to let you know that Carla is working with the Chief Judge around a recommendation for an appointee to serve on our commission, and so as Carla has success in that, she'll let us know, and we'll have somebody new appointed by the Chief Judge, hopefully soon, but I don't know. Do do you have anything to add to that, Kirby? Do you know anything more than I know?
No, that's right.
No, you know a thousand things more.
And add to that is there are also two other members. The way that the commission terms are staggered is that every year three members' terms are expiring or up for renewal. So there are two other members. JJ's up for a reappointment, I think, by the sheriff, and might be Darcy. I'll have to. Is it you, Darcy?
I think so, because I took the term for Brian Hall, and he served a year of the 3-year term because he was chairman at the time. So I think I only have 2 years.
Okay. So I think Darcy and I know JJ are up for an appointment, and so the process will be for that Carla will reach out to their appointing authorities, the sheriff for JJ and the state attorney for Darcy, and see if they're interested in reappointing them because they're both eligible for a second term. And so those would not come before the commission for action, but that is something the commission would be apprised of.
Excellent. Any other questions or comments about that? Okay. Next up is public comments. But I don't think there's any public to make comments, so we'll move on. The next section is announcements and scheduling of future meetings. And I wonder if you'll indulge me to make a little announcement. It's weird. I work at Baptist Health, I think you know that. And I've worked there for 31 years, and this is the first time I can think of that Baptist Health has encouraged us to share information publicly, and it's about COVID, and we talked about COVID earlier today and its impact on things like Cormet meetings and attendance. And so if you're not aware, citywide there's been a 57% increase in people who are COVID positive requiring hospitalization. At Baptist, we are right alongside that trend. On Friday, we had 107 patients who had COVID who were in the hospital. On Monday, we had 152, and today we have 161. And this is not a vaccination commercial, but I will share with you that of the 152 people who are currently hospitalized at Baptist with COVID, 148 are not vaccinated. Of the four who were vaccinated, only two were fully vaccinated. And so I would encourage you, if you're not interested in getting vaccinated, to please be careful and wear a mask and social distance when you can, because this is like heartbreaking to watch at work. It is so bad. I can't even tell you my cry. It's just horrible. I work in the CCU at Baptist Beaches 3 days a week, and there are people younger than me who are on ventilators who are dying, and it's preventable, and it makes me very sad. So that's my little announcement for the day. Now we can talk about meetings, but I might not be able to from all upset. I think, Sandy, though, did you tell me, or do I know that the City Council wants us to provide meeting dates through the rest of the calendar year because they want to know what rooms are available? Okay, so can we do, how do you want to proceed? Do you want to pull out our calendars and try to do that right now? What do you recommend, Sandy? Last time we tried to do that, it was a hot mess, but we can give it a shot first. Mm-hmm. Kirby, do you have oh, you're giving her the microphone. Fantastic. I don't have a preference. I kind of like when we all pull out our phones and play the game, but sometimes it's so unproductive, it's not a good use of our time. All right, we have three, four, I see a bunch of nods. So let's do the email, and then if we could just be as quick to respond to Sandy as possible so she can respond to City Council with our information. They want to know about committee meetings and about commission meetings, Sandy? They want to know about all kinds of meetings that we might have, or just the full commission meetings, because the other ones are in smaller rooms?
I would say both, because we reserve this room here also for committee meetings, and for the public needs to be here also.
Okay. So off the top of my head, I would say we should make 4 meetings, and I'm just thinking out loud. August, September, October, November. We generally don't have a meeting in December. If the things I'm crying about are better in December, maybe we'll be able to have another holiday gathering. I don't know. But we don't usually meet in December. So I think it would be safe to plan 4. Do you think that's fair? 3 or 4. Well, if we plan 4 and we don't have them, that's better than planning 2 and meeting 4, I think. And that way your calendars could be blocked, and if we cancel, you get time back.
are now, that doesn't take into account any type of meetings that are going to happen.
Right. I'm thinking Sandy's saying you just want to know about the full meetings. Right. Each committee may decide to call a meeting depending on the work that you have before you, and I leave that to your judgment along with the judgment of Kirby and Carla. Okay, so it's going to be emails. Does anybody else want to take a minute to make an announcement, anything else important that we need to know or you want to share with the group? Hearing none, I think we can adjourn. Thank you all for your time and for indulging me. I appreciate it very much. I hope you all have a great day. Thank you. I don't want to touch it because I'm scared. Just stop.